Good morning, Hebrew Nation Radio and all my Torah fans. It is such a delight to be with you on this beautiful Thursday morning from Deep South, Mississippi. You're listening to Manna from Heaven Ministries, Manna Live. And, of course, my name is David Matthews. And you know what? You have tuned in to KPJC 1220 AM Hebrew Nation Radio, wired radio at its best. And I'd like to say a great big welcome home, Hebrew, to all of you that are tuning in this morning, especially if you're a first-time listener. It is such an awesome privilege to be able to sit down with you and come together around the table as we look over the things that Father's been revealing to us in His Scripture. And, of course, to sit kneecap to kneecap gives us a familiarity that you really can't get any other way. And so I'd just like to say, get comfortable, make yourself a seat there on the couch somewhere close by, sit down with me for a few moments. You and I have just got to talk. Well, you know that we've been looking at this wonderful Torah portion from last week, and of course we've just finished up one more yearly cycle. We're into the new part of the year. We just have started addressing Bereshit, the Book of Beginnings, known as Genesis. But before we get into it, I'd like to just say a great happy birthday to my lovely wife, Brenda. She just made her Jubilee season, and she's been such a blessing to my life, and she's hopefully listening live this morning as well on the computer. And you and I are going to see some great things happen in the days that are ahead of us. And so I just want you to know that you're part of the family that Brenda and I have been cultivating all these years. You're Mishpacha, and we're just glad to have you with us. Well, let's jump right in to the study that we left yesterday. You know, we were really breaking down that word Bereshit, and it's actually more than just a word. It is, in Hebrew, a phrase that's translated in the English, in the beginning. And, of course, we discussed Isaiah 46:10, which declares that Father has revealed the end, which is our day, from Bereshit, the beginning. And so if you want to find out what's about to happen in the days in front of you, if you want to know about socioeconomic upheaval, if you want to know about the major weather catastrophes and all of the peculiar anomalies that are associated with earthquakes and famines and pestilence, right now here on in South Mississippi, we're actually right in the middle of a hurricane to the south of us in the Caribbean and snowstorms to the north of us. And so you just really never know today what may be about to happen. Well, I would suggest that if you are inquisitive and you want to know, that you begin to delve into the language of the Torah, because He has written this book, in particular the Book of Beginnings, as a blueprint for this last generation. Yes, that's right. Even though it was written hundreds and hundreds of years ago, it was actually specifically written, compiled for the generation that would see the culmination of the end. And that's you. Yes, that's right. Put your finger on your chest and say, me? Of course, I am talking to you. This book was written for you. Now, we looked yesterday and we found that as we begin to delve into the word Bereshit, it literally can be translated as in the beginning and also in the shaking, because the root of that word reshit is the word rosh, which in fact does mean head, but in particular, it's referencing the head as the head is being shaken. And so we saw that the process of creation involved some sort of cataclysmic upheaval. You can call it the Big Bang Theory, and that is really, it's not all that wrong, because it was a cataclysmic explosion, I believe, of the Word of Yah that was released into creation. Although it's not quite the way the evolutionists declare it, I do believe that when Father's voice is released in the earth, that it shakes things to its very foundation. And we looked at another word there in that Genesis 1 and 2, where it talks about the Ruach HaKodesh, the set-apart spirit, the Holy Spirit, and how He moved upon the face of the waters. And we saw that that word moved there in Hebrew is the word rechav. And if you had a Strong's Concordance, you could see it was number 7363. And everything is established in the mouth of at least two witnesses. And here's your second witness, because that word moved literally means to shake as well. And so now you have two witnesses regarding a shaking that took place at the inception of creation. And we saw that there were some closely related words. I call them related, in the technical term is cognate words. That word rechav is closely related to the word for Rahab. And of course, you remember Rahab. She was one of the principal figures in the Torah, in particular, when Joshua and the children of Israel are about to cross over into the promised land and engage in conflict with the city known as Jericho, there was a harlot, and her name was Rahab. And if you study history, the tradition teaches that Rahab later marries Joshua, which is another beautiful shadow picture that you can see throughout the scriptures, because Joshua in Hebrew is translated Yehoshua, and it's the same Hebrew rendering that we get Yeshua from. And so you find Yeshua marrying a bride who is at one time a harlot, but she is redeemed by that scarlet thread. And of course, you remember the scarlet thread. That's how her home was identified to keep her from being annihilated. Rahab hung a scarlet thread outside her window, and it was because of that scarlet thread that she was spared annihilation. Well, some of you, when you hear these kinds of teaching, you may think, well, that's contrary to what a lot of the churches are teaching today, that Father loves us and he's not going to judge us harshly. And as a matter of fact, I hear people all the time saying, judge not lest you be judged. And they're very quick to point out that we have a license now to engage in sin because we've been saved. And they say that we have this thing called grace, which was free unmerited favor, and that allows us to live in any sort of lifestyle. And please understand, I'm being sarcastic here, because grace is far from something that's unmerited. As a matter of fact, we've discussed grace on a number of occasions, and it's associated first with Noah, and grace comes from being obedient. Did you hear what I just said? It comes from being obedient. Mercy is what's unmerited. We don't understand the mercy of Yah because it rains on the just and unjust alike. However, grace comes from hearing and being obedient, and that is substantiated by Romans chapter 10, verse 17, which tells us that faith comes from hearing and hearing by the word. Now, I want to look at that word scarlet we were just talking about. If you notice, the word scarlet is seen throughout the Torah. And if you allow me just a little sidebar here, we'll look at it for a second. In Hebrew, it's Strong's number 8144, and it's pronounced Shani. And it's literally, it means not only scarlet, but it is actually the same as the word that means second, to do it again, to replicate. And whenever you see this word and see it connected to this scarlet thread, and of course, you know, that's a euphemistic term. That's actually referring to the blood that was shed for your redemption, the blood of the Lamb, the blood of Messiah. And I firmly believe that what is happening when you see that term is that Father's declaring that he is going to replicate himself again in the earth. And he did that in the person of Messiah. And he also replicated the Adam. Remember the first Adam who was created in the image and likeness of Yah? And of course, you know, because of Adam's sin, death passed into the world. And so Yahweh replicates the Adam for the second time back in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, the second Adam being Yeshua himself. Well, if you look at that word Shani, the word for scarlet, it has a two-letter root. And the letters in Hebrew are Sheen and Nun. And if you put them together, the word Sin, it literally is defined as meaning a learned man. It's the root of the word Sinai. And if you look at the yod suffix that's attached to it, that yod indicates possession, ownership. And so Shani or Sinai, for that matter, could both mean my learned man. And it's actually inferring once again to the learned man. Who was he? The Messiah, Yeshua. He was the one who was hanged on the tree. And in this instance with Rahab, typified by being hung on the wall, that scarlet thread, so that she could be redeemed. Now, we know that it was because of that redemption process that creation has been offered the opportunity of the cleansing water that, or the cleansing process that the blood gives you. Now, we're told that though our sins be as scarlet, they can become white as snow. Now listen, did you know that tradition teaches that there was a scarlet thread that was hung on the temple door on every day of atonement that occurs once a year? And if the father would accept the sacrifice, that scarlet thread would turn white. But it is widely known and documented in tradition, and a lot of historical works cite this, that in circa 30 AD, at the time of the execution of Yeshua, that scarlet thread never turned white again. And you can find that even in the Babylonian Talmud, Rosh Hashanah 31b. Now, that particular Torah portion that you and I have been looking at for the last couple of days, known as Bereshit, the beginning, it's really important because there are so many foundational truths that are just rife with all sorts of hidden things that, you know, they can be very controversial. For instance, the controversy surrounding the Sabbath that's occurring today. A lot of people are adhering to an first day of the week, a Sunday Sabbath in lieu of the seventh day Sabbath that has been instituted in the Torah. That's in Genesis chapter 2. And then if you look in Genesis chapter 3, a lot of you were taught that because of the fall of man occurred simply because Adam and Eve partook of an apple from off that tree there, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, when in fact, all you have to do is look in the Hebrew language and you'll find that that tree, should have been referred to as the tree of carnal knowledge. And it was more than just the fruit, like you would assume an apple or a peach or a fig or some sort. It was actually the fruit of the entity that the tree represented. Very few people have a difficult time acknowledging that the tree of life that was in that garden, the same place, was a representation of Messiah. Well, then, why is it such a stretch of the imagination to understand that this tree of the knowledge of good and evil was actually a metaphor that was representing Hasatan, also in the form here of the serpent? And if you go back to Genesis chapter 1, you'll find that there is a law, one of the laws of Genesis, that every tree has fruit with its seed in itself. And so when she took of the fruit of this tree, she actually was taking of the seed of this entity, this person in front of her, and because of that, she conceives serpent seed in the process. And a lot of individuals have problems with it, but it's medically documented today that you can have twins in the womb from two different fathers, and Abel and Cain, Cain and Abel, were in fact twins from two different fathers in the womb of Eve. Now, that's just another of the controversial subjects. There's one more that you can see because this Torah portion extends all the way to Genesis chapter 6, verse 8. And of course, in chapter 6, you find the earth about to be destroyed by the Mabul, the flood, the deluge. And of course, the reason it's going to be destroyed is because all of the world at that time, except for Noah, Noah's wife, his three sons and their wives, had their seed line. There's that phrase again, seed line, had been compromised by the fallen ones, the Nephilim, who had came in unto the daughters of men and mingled their seed with them and produced a race known as the giants. Well, Noah was spared. He found grace in the eyes of Yah because he refused to compromise his bloodline. Another controversial subject. And here we are, looking at the very first verse of Genesis chapter 1, in the beginning Yahweh creates the heavens and the earth, and in verse 2 it says, and the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep, and the Spirit of Yahweh moved upon the face of the waters. Right here is the first controversial area of the Torah, and actually of the scriptures as a whole. And here is where you have the creationist arguing with the young earth individuals, and you have those that espouse a gap theory, which I personally adhere to, and I believe that if we look at it enough, we can prove that from between Genesis chapter 1, verse 1 and chapter 1, verse 2, there was, in fact, a creation and subsequent recreation. But right here is where the controversy begins. And if you will, now, you don't have to follow my particular beliefs. I would suggest that you do what 2 Timothy 2:15 says, and you know, I've quoted it to you so many times, it tells us to study to show yourselves approved unto Yah, workmen that need not to be ashamed. And the only way you can do that is by rightly dividing the word of truth. So you don't take my word for it. Go back and look at these things for yourself. I will promise you, everything that you hear me teaching or anyone else, if it can't stand scrutiny, then it's fallacious. It's false. But if it's in fact truth, the truth can be scrutinized. It can be examined. And I promise you, I'm not intimidated by anyone examining the things that I teach. I actually would admonish you to do just that. Now let's, if you will, look at that word, that sentence, if you will. In the beginning, Yahweh creates the heavens and the earth, and the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep, and the Spirit of Yahweh moved upon the waters, the face of the waters. First of all, let's look at that word for created. In Hebrew, if you were looking in your Strong's Concordance, it's number 1254, and it happens to be a verb, and it shows action. And of course, the action here is the fact that Yahweh himself creates. He brings something into existence. Now, in the Hebrew, and when this particular word is used, only Yahweh is the subject of this particular verb. He alone creates. Now, the verb tense here is in the perfect form, and it's actually expressing a completed action. In other words, both the heaven and the earth are complete. However, if we read verse 2, it follows with words that seem to imply an incomplete condition. In other words, it says, and the earth was without form and void. However, if you'll notice, nothing is said here regarding the condition of the present heavens. Now, I've looked at that hundreds of times over the course of the years, and it never occurred to me until I was preparing this teaching. Let me remind you this again. And the earth was without form and void. Remember, Yahweh creates the heavens and the earth, but in verse 2 it only suggests that the earth is without form and void, while nothing regarding the condition of the heavens is mentioned. Now, it's not an accident that it's put in this particular fashion. Father is intentional, not only in the Hebrew language with how he lays these things out, but he's trying to convey something to us. And so we're basically left to surmise that since the heavens and earth were initially created and created complete, the earth now is in a form, without form and void condition, the heavens are still in a completed fashion. And so basically, you could say Bereshit bara Elohim in the first shaking, or in the beginning, Yahweh created. And that literally, the word Bereshit here is in a plural form, shakings. And so it's actually implying that there are subsequent shakings that are going to follow. And so I pose the question, not only to my congregation, but to those of you that are listening, is it possible that in the inception of creation here and the shaking that brought creation about, that the physical realm of the earth was affected, and yet the spiritual realm, the abode of Yahweh, and the place of his word remained intact? Well, you go back and study this and let Yahweh give you some answers. Well, I firmly believe we have already, according to Revelation 13:8, a declaration regarding the house of Yahweh and his intent regarding his bride and the redemption process, because it said the Lamb was slain before the foundation of the world. And so we see here it's evident that the physical realm is where redemption has to occur. And as we've continued to look at it, you can see it in Hebrews chapter 12, 25 through 28, that there's going to be another shaking, and that shaking is going to occur in the last days. But in this particular instance, not only is the earth going to be shaken, but the heavens. And you see another confirmation of that in 2 Peter chapter 3, where we're told that the heavens and the earth are going to be renovated by fire. Now, we'll look at that hopefully before today's broadcast is over. Now, that word for heavens here, ha shemayim, the heavens. If you were to look at the word shemayim, it's actually in a singular form, even though that yod mem attached on the end of the word makes it plural. It's actually in a singular form. And if you were to look at the way it's translated, it's actually translated in most places as a lofty expanse. And what I'd like to do, in addition to being heavens and sky, the abode of Yahweh, but what I'd like to do is to call your attention to the root of it. And the root of it, if you studied Hebrew or listened to us, in particular throughout this broadcast, you know that the root of it is pretty obvious. It's the word mayim, shemayim. Well, the word mayim or mayim in Hebrew is a word for waters. And it's well known that when you prefix the Hebrew letter sheen to a word, it's actually forms an article or a pronoun that can mean that, which, who, or whom. And so it's possible that although this word shemayim is translated as heavens, expanse, lofty, sky, that it can also mean that which watered. Remember, mayim, waters, that which watered, or that which mikvahed. Well, that word mikvah, if you're not familiar with it, it literally means to be immersed or baptized. Can you see how important it is? So it's the heavens that watered or mikvahed. Now, throughout the scriptures, we understand that there's a definite correlation between waters and seed and the word. As a matter of fact, they can be used interchangeably. You know, it's the washing of the water of the word that cleanses us. We know that the water and the word that are planted on the inside of us are synonymous with the seed of Yah. And what does it do? It's his seed that repairs, or his word that repairs, our corrupt fleshly DNA. Now, let's break that word shemayim, heavens, down even further. Look at that two-letter root, the sheen, mem. And if you pronounce them shem, it's the Hebrew word for name. And then if you look on the end of it, you have the yod mem that I called your attention to. It actually gives it a plural suffix. But yod mem, yam, in Hebrew can also be translated as sea or great waters. And so once more, if you continue to break these words down, you can see that Father has some other things hidden. It's the shem, the name which waters. It's the name by or in which we are watered or mikvahed. Can you see how important it is to stop long enough in your studies to just begin to look at the origin, to rightly divide, to dissect these words and open them apart? Well, let's look at the word earth. Yahweh creates the shemayim and the eretz, the earth. Well, if you looked at that word in Hebrew, it's written with an aleph, resh, and a zadi. And of course, that's basically the physical plane where all of the things that you can see with your natural eye was created and placed, inserted, if you will. So you could basically say that the earth is actually the place where the seed or the word of Yahweh was planted. Well, the first seed of man was the Adam. Can you see where we're going here? And so isn't it obvious, excuse me, that the earth becomes the womb from which man was birthed? Well, that's in keeping basically with Genesis chapter 2, because Yahweh takes from the ground the Adama, and he forms the Adam. Now, we're very close to the first break of this half hour. I don't want to lose you, so hang on. We'll be back in a few moments, and make sure you bring somebody else with you for the last half hour and prepare them for what's going to be shared with them on the other side of this break. I really appreciate you listening. Come back and sit down with me. Don't touch that dial. I'll see you on the other side. Shalom.
The first annual Shebrews Women in Torah Conference CDs are here and on sale now. Women from all over the United States were blessed like never before, and now you can hear the same speakers no matter where you are by visiting HebrewNationRadio.com. Whether you want a copy of these timely spirit and truth teachings for your own study or to share them with your friends and family, you won't want to miss out. The complete conference set of 14 CDs featuring Brittany Scott, Pam Staley, Valerie Moody, Brenda Matthews, and Nitza Moshe, with several other wonderful teachers, will help you to change your understanding of the Bible. As a special bonus, we are including David Matthews' exciting new teaching, The Rainbow Covenant. That's 16 CDs total, regularly $160 plus postage, but now offered at only $120 as a CD set, or $75 as an electronic download sent to your email. Individual CDs are available for $10 each, or $5 in digital format. Call for more information today at 503-316-1220, or order at www.HebrewNationRadio.com.
Welcome back, my Hebrew friends. I'm so glad that you're in the room with us this morning as we're looking over last week's Torah portion entitled Bereshit. We've had a wonderful journey this morning as we looked into it. We're by no means going to cover this exhaustively. There's just too many wonderful things that Father has hidden in here for you. And what I've been trying to do is to give you some little tidbits that you can go back and research on your own and add to your repertoire of wonderful gleanings that you've discovered in the Torah. And I would suggest that you do, and I'm going to quote it one more time. It might be redundant to some of you, but 2 Timothy 2:15 tells you to study to show yourselves approved unto Yah, workmen that need not to be ashamed, by rightly dividing this word of truth. And so if you'll please do that, you'll find that what Father will do is that he will honor your diligence. He'll honor your search in the scriptures. And if you will draw closer to him, and I promise you that he'll begin to reveal some things in his word that you have never seen before. Now, we've been looking in Genesis chapter 1, verse 1 and 2, and we know that Father says in the beginning that he creates the Shemayim, the heavens, and the Aretz, the earth. And what I did just before the break, I was trying to call your attention to the connection between the spirit realm and the heavens and the physical or natural realm and the Aretz, the earth. And, of course, we looked at the word earth, Strong's number 776. It's written with three Hebrew letters, Aleph, Resh, Zadi, Aretz. And we know that this was the original place where the seed of Adam, or the seed of Yahweh, man, was initially planted, in the earth. And so the earth becomes the womb, the source of origin that man was created within. Now, it's interesting because, once again, it is Father who created the language of Torah, the language of creation, Hebrew. And if you go back and look in Isaiah 55:11, he says, "So shall my word be that goes forth out of my mouth. It will not return unto me void." This is his word. And so the intent that he displays in every one of these Hebrew letters and subsequent Hebrew words formed by the letters, and of course, as we've been prone to share with you, the numeric value of the individual letters, the intent of Yahweh is to convey his mind that is so infinite that you and I can't comprehend it except and unless we begin to delve into the language. Now, the word Aretz for earth, if you spell it backwards, remember, it's Aleph, Resh, Zadi. Well, if you spell it Zadi, Resh, Aleph, it's a word in Hebrew, Zerah, that is used to describe an adulterous woman who, like a narrow well, has no means of escape. And you know that Father was privy, even before creation began, regarding what was going to happen to his creation. He knew that his bride, Adam and Eve, that were created expressly for intimacy with him, he knew that they would compromise themselves with the serpent and subsequently become an adulterous bride and would be in need of redemption. And so all of this was typified back in Genesis chapter 1, long before the physical event ever occurred. And people have a hard time with it, but that's why he tells you in the beginning, Isaiah 46:10, I have declared the end. Now, There's some other curious things that I want to call your attention to regarding that word for heaven, Shemayim. Again, Strong's number 8064. And if you will note, it's written with a sheen, mem, yod, mem. And the numeric value of each of those individual letters, sheen 300, mem 40, yod 10, and the last mem is again 40. The total is 390. Well, that's the number of years that was meted out for judgment towards Israel, the 10 northern tribes, regarding her idolatries. Again, her adulterous condition. You see that in Ezekiel chapter 4. Well, you also know that because they failed to repent, that Father sevened that judgment, that period of judgment, that 390 years, 2,730 years. As a matter of fact, most scholars acknowledge that the year of exile, that 2,730 years, has just recently ended. I believe it ended in Tabernacles of 2010. And I have a question I want to ask you. Do you think that it's possible that right now that the heavens are revealing that the times of Jacob's troubles, the labor pains, have already begun? Well, I believe so, and I have a resounding yes that I'd like to shout out. I firmly believe that what Father's trying to teach us, even in these Torah portions, is that he understood that there would be a season of judgment that would be allocated to his adulterous bride, and he pictographically put that in the Hebrew language. Now let's look at that word Shemayim again. It's used 395 times in the Tanakh, and that's what we would commonly refer to as the Old Testament. Well, again, 395 happens to be the numeric value of the word neshama, which means breath, and Genesis 2:7 declares that it was the neshama, the breath of lives, that was breathed into the Adam. And if you look at the word neshama, the root of it is nasam, which means to pant, to breathe heavily, deep, to gasp, just like a woman in labor. So once more, it's supporting that pattern I just was sharing with you, where the bride who engaged in sin was judged and restored. Now, let's look a little bit further. That word Shemayim has a closely related word to it, Strong's number 8063, Samika. And that word is a noun that indicates a mantle, a covering, or a garment. And so the heavens become a mantle that literally cover the natural realm, the earth, the bride, just like Boaz covered Ruth. Remember when Ruth comes into Boaz and she comes down and uncovers his feet, and he literally covers her with his talit, which was indicative of the fact that he was going to bring her into his house? Well, it's not an accident that in this story regarding Ruth and Boaz that you can see two distinct brides being compared. You have Ruth, her name is translated, Strong's number 7327, as meaning friend, but it actually is from the word ra'ah, which means shepherd, and re'ut, which means a female to the mate. And so literally, Ruth becomes the bride or the mate to the shepherd. Well, there was another counterpart. Remember, Naomi, her mother-in-law, had two daughters-in-law, Ruth and Orpah. Well, the word Orpah is from the root of the word oref, which means neck or the back of the neck, and it's the word that's used to define one who's in a rebellious condition. And so you see that what she does is she's a demonstration of the rebellious bride who refuses to acknowledge the God of Naomi, like Ruth did. Remember, Naomi says, "Your people will be my people, your Elohim will be mine." Well, Orpah refused. And so you find that the heavens here that we're talking about represent Yeshua, who I believe became a picture of the second Adam that was planted in the earth. And I believe that just as surely as Yeshua had to endure the refiner's fire, he was tempted and tried just like you and I are tempted and tried. The word says, in all points, like as we are, yet without sin. Again, you're going to find the heavens will be refined by fire themselves, 2 Peter chapter 3. Now, let's go on to Genesis chapter 1, verse 2. And it tells us, "And the earth was without form and void, And darkness was upon the face of the deep, and the Spirit of Yahweh moved upon the face of the waters. Well, that word, va'aretz hayetah tohu va'bohu, that part of the sentence there is pretty important. If you go back and look at the numeric value of that phrase, without form and void, waste and desolate, in Hebrew, tohu va'bohu, you'll find that the numeric value of it is 430. And now, 430 should be familiar with you, because it was 430 years that the children of Israel were in exile in Egypt. They were in a waste and desolate condition, waste and desolate place. So again, you see it all foreshadowed right here in Genesis chapter 1, verse 2. And it's not an accident. If you would just take the time, go back and count the Hebrew letters in this verse. The wonderful little tidbits, you could spend the rest of your life right here in Genesis chapter 1. Well, this verse has 52 letters. And it's not an accident that the number 52 is the numeric value of the word ban, bait, noon, which means sun. And it was the bruising of the sun, Yeshua, which was instrumental in restoring creation. Now, did you know that 52 is a doubling or a duplication of 26? Well, that's simple math, but 26 is the numeric value of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, the name of Father. And what did he do? He duplicated himself. Genesis chapter 1, 26 through 28 says that his desire was to create man in his image, to reduplicate himself, to replicate himself. And we're told that Yeshua is the express image. He is the replication of the Father. And so when you see that number 52, it's indicating Messiah again, the Ban, the Son who was replicated in the earth. Now, that's not all. What about that 2,730 years of exile that we were just talking about? Did you know that you can divide it by this number 52? That's exactly right. And if you divide it by 52, guess what? It's 52.5. It's almost a perfect reduplication there. But if you'll divide it by 26, the Yod Heh Vav Heh, the number of times that 26 will go into 2,730 is 105. And 105 is the numeric value of a very familiar place, the name of a place that the children of Israel were found while they were in the wilderness. It was called Massah. You remember Massah and Meribah? Well, Meribah, that word literally means place of jealousy and rebellion, but Massah was a place known as the place of testing and proving. Can you see that? So once again, right here in Genesis chapter 1, verse 2, Father's telling you about the Son who would be bruised to redeem creation, that Father would replicate himself in the earth in the form of Messiah, and that it would be the Messiah who would be typified in Moses, who would lead the children of Israel out of 430 years of tohu va-bohu, waste and desolation. And it would be at the end of that season of testing and proving that the children of Israel would be set free. Well, guess what? That again, there was another 2,730 years of testing and proving that the children of Israel have went through. And you and I are part of that group that are being brought out of Babylon. We're being brought into the place where we can once again enjoy the beneficence of the Creator, who's extended himself in the earth in the form of his word. The written Hebrew Torah language is here to give you wonderful insight about the nature and character of Yahweh. And there's so many things that are wrong in us, our flesh. There's so many things in us that need a touch from the hand of Yah. And our DNA's been compromised because of the ravages and the effects, not only of sin, but just simply because of the carnal Adamic nature. And it's only the DNA of Yahweh, the word that's taken on the inside of you, that can renew your mind or change your DNA. Now, that's pretty interesting. It's only an idiot that would expect different results after continuing to plant the same thing every time. If you want different results, you're going to have to plant different seed. Well, the same thing applies to the word. We're going to have to plant the Hebrew language, the language of the Torah. We're going to have to start making that proper application in our life if we're expecting to see the change that Father said is going to come. Zephaniah 3:8-9, in the last days he's going to restore this pure language so that we can all worship him with one consent. Now, while I was just taking a short moment looking at that verse, Genesis 1:2, and the earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep, I just, once again, not only did I count the letters, and all that I did this morning while I was preparing for this radio broadcast, I happened to, in addition to counting the letters, I noticed that there were two letters that were repeated 8 different times in this one verse. Now, you know the number 8 is the number of new beginnings, right? And that's exactly what Father's doing. This is the book of beginnings. It's teaching you about new beginnings, a redemption. A redeeming means something is being deemed again. It's being redone. Well, 4 times those two letters occur side by side. And when they occur together, those two letters are the hey and the vav. And when the hey and the vav occur together, they form a word in Hebrew, a masculine pronoun called or pronounced who. And who in Hebrew is equivalent to the English pronoun he. And so it's literally telling us that he is the son who becomes the four, the door to new beginnings. And it's in this particular verse, right in the middle of tohu va bohu, waste and desolation, that you can see a powerful explanation of the entire plan of Yahweh regarding the house of Israel. You can see how they went 430 years into bondage. You can see how he planned to send his son as the redeemer, the deliverer, not only of Israel, but of all the nations. But you can also see that Israel would succumb again to idolatrous practices and go into 2,700 years more bondage. And that, yes, at the end of that bondage, that the deliverer would come again. Well, guess what? He's shortly to arrive on the scene. And when he does, I've got news for you. He's coming to set the captives free. Now, the interesting thing about it is that Father's making us some tremendous promises. When we look at that word Bereshit, it's trying to teach us that Father is going to reveal in these last days some tremendous things that have been hidden and reserved for just this period of time. Now, if you continue to break that phrase tohu va bohu down and look at the vowel points, you've got a really interesting puzzle. Remember, the hey vowel spells the word who in Hebrew, meaning he. And at the end of the word, it infers the action that is being shown of this pronoun. Now, if you look at the Hebrew letter, the Beit Aleph, bo, that word in Hebrew means come. And so, bohu literally means he comes. Listen to me. Do you see that? Bohu, he comes. Well, the tav vav spells the Hebrew word tav, meaning a covenant, a mark, a sign. And so, tohu can be seen as, there's that word who, he is the tav, he is the sign. And so the entire phrase literally is translated into English as waste and desolate, without form and void. But in the Hebrew, it is actually saying out of waste and desolation, he is the covenant sign and he comes. Wow, what a powerful prophetic declaration. And here we've actually confined ourselves to the little fixed parameters that you can only, of the King James English, and you can only see just a very microscopic pinpoint of the redemption plan of Yahweh. Enough to get you into kingdom, I will say, and acknowledge without fail. But on the other hand, if you begin to look at it in the Hebrew language, the tent stakes can be lifted up, your borders are being expanded, your tents being enlarged, and your overall view and the understanding of who he is and who you are in him is going to become so enhanced that it's going to revolutionize your walk with him. And you're going to find that when the days in front of us begin to get difficult and controversy ensues, and all the known world is thrown into utter chaos. Now, you need to remember, Acts chapter 3 and 4, and Hebrews chapter 1 tells us that Yeshua is going to be waiting in the heavens until the restitution of all things and until his enemies are made his footstool. And if that's the case, who is going to be subjugating the enemies of Yah in the midst of all this chaos? Well, I would suggest to you and submit for you to examine, and you need to do that so that you don't have to take my word for it. But I firmly believe that it's in the midst of all this conflict and chaos. And Daniel says it this way, those that do know him shall do exploits. Well, the word know there is the key, because in Hebrew it's a very intimate sexual term. And it's inferring the intimacy that is gleaned between a husband and wife. And in Matthew chapter 7, when Yeshua is talking about the two different pathways, one's a broad way that leads to destruction and the other's a narrow way, and few are there that find it. And then he talks about those that would come to him in the last day and make all sorts of claims and make all sorts of declarations. And he will say unto them, depart from me, I never knew you. The same phrase, even in the Greek, can give you insight that it has to do with the intimacy that's reserved between a husband and wife. Now, I want you to understand, Father wants you to rise up and to be like Samson. When the declaration is made in the end times that the Philistines are upon us, you're going to have to rise up and shake yourself and equip yourself like a man. And I believe with all my heart that he's given you the Torah and he's given you some insight in the Word. You're hearing things that you've never heard before. And it's not an accident, because just like Esther, you were chosen for just such a time as this. Don't waste it. Don't neglect it. Take advantage of the opportunity that's being offered to you. You're listening to Hebrew Nation Radio. And I promise you, there is no other place that I personally know of that you can find such a compilation of, and you can have access to worship and praise music. You can have access to wonderful Torah teachers and some other written materials that will help you in your walk and enable you, as you become more mature, to become that beacon and lighthouse that will help others as they themselves begin to awaken. And you can say to them, welcome home, Hebrew. And we can embrace this thing together, and we can begin to worship him with one consent. And I firmly believe that we're on the verge of seeing that great generation. Everybody talks about the generation that was during World War II, how that was our greatest generation. And it may have been as far as the United States of America is concerned, but I will tell you one thing, and I will say it with all the emphasis that I can muster. The greatest generation that has ever walked the face of the earth is this generation that's been raised up in this last day. As a matter of fact, in Romans chapter 8, it tells us that as many as are led by the Spirit, these are the sons of Yah. The word in Greek is huios, the fully matured sons. And if you finish reading chapter 8, you're told that creation itself is waiting for the manifestation of those sons. The word manifestation means to be made visible. It's not that we aren't here. It just means that we've been hidden for a season, and we're shortly to be made visible. And when we are, creation is going to see the curse loosed from off of it. And in the process, there's going to be the greatest confrontation that has ever ensued between the two seed line, that of the seed of the serpent and that of the seed of the woman through which Messiah came, all the way back to this Torah portion, Genesis chapter 3, verse 15. That war has not ceased, and you are going to play an integral part of it. So I would suggest that you take advantage of everything that you can in your arsenal. Ephesians chapter 6 talks about putting on the whole armor of Yah, the helmet of salvation, breastplate of righteousness, having your loins girt about with truth, the sword of the Spirit, feet shod with the preparation of the gospel. If you go back and read the Torah, you'll find that all of those are the vestments that were peculiar to the priestly lineage. And I would suggest that that's what you were raised up to be. And what does the priest do? He intercedes on the behalf of the people. He's a mediator between Yahweh and man. But he was also responsible for teaching the Torah to the people. And so begin to do just that. You were called for it. Now, I know that we're getting close to the end of today's broadcast. I hope that you've enjoyed this teaching. You can find it podcasted if you missed any of it here at HebrewNationRadio.com. And if they don't have access to it, I'm sure that they do, but if for some reason they don't, the notes have been written, and I'll make sure to give them to you and make them available if you'll contact me personally at dmatt77@bellsouth.net. Now, we have just a few seconds before today's broadcast is over. Why don't you celebrate the Sabbath with your mishpika beginning tomorrow evening at sundown through Saturday evening and assemble together, because the day is approaching when we're going to be able to see the demonstration, the outpouring of His Spirit like we've never seen before. Once again, I hope you've enjoyed the broadcast. Contact Hebrew Nation Radio at 503-316-1220 and let them know you appreciate them and you appreciate the work that they're doing and the message of the kingdom that's being shared. We're close to the end, folks, and I'm talking about the end of the age. So rise up and become the man and woman that Yahweh has called you to be. I'll see you coming this Monday. You and I will sit down together because we have just got to talk. Shalom aleichem.